No, wait, seriously? What? Oh my.
They're playing the music before we can say anything else. It's going to be an HR violation.
Man. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdal. I'll pay no attention to that HR violation. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense clean. We do it clean.
Clean. We do not need an E on this episode.
Yeah, that's right.
I am Kimberly Adams. Thank you for joining us this Thursday. We are going to just talk about the news, for real.
Just the news. And we'll end with a smile. Tell you what, you go first on the news.
Yes. So I was so fascinated by this exclusive from the New York Times that came out, was it last night? About the owner of Patagonia giving away the company. Just like full on leaning into the mission, giving away the company in order to allow all the profits and the value and the proceeds of the company to go to, you know, continue to go towards environmental causes. So for those who don't know, Patagonia is an outdoor apparel company, very known for its sort of environmentally conscious focus and, you know, encouraging people to not buy their stuff and to reuse things and to go outside and really investing in sort of nature and parks and things like that. But what's amazing about this story is this family, I guess it's pronounced Chouinard?
Chouinard, right. Yvonne Chouinard.
Chouinard.
Many years ago, I went up to, I don't even know where they are, like Ventura, and interviewed him for the show many years ago.
What was that like? How was he?
Oh, he's a lovely, lovely, lovely man. He's an old French guy, or maybe Swiss, I don't even know. He's about 5 foot nothing, weathered and gnarly, and just doesn't give a bleepity bleep 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 what anybody thinks.
You should ask him to chat with you again, because this is super interesting that not only
just super quick. He was a tough interview when he was 80. I can't imagine what he's like it, however the hell old he is now. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair.
All right. Yeah. Anyway,
so he's founded this company like 50 years ago, and this is straight from the New York Times, rather than selling the company or taking it public, he and his wife and two adult children have transferred their ownership of Patagonia, valued at about $3 billion, to a specially designed trust and a nonprofit organization. They were created to preserve the company's independence and ensure that all of its profits, some $100 million a year, are used to combat climate change and protect undeveloped land around the globe. So that's a big deal, you know, going from a billionaire to not, and the fact that his kids were on board. You know, a lot of times people who, you know, were born into that kind of wealth and power and prestige might not be so willing to just give it all up. And sure, all these people are going to still live very comfortable lives on the payroll of the foundation or the company or whatever, but this is a lot of money to give away. And what struck me about the New York Times piece is that this actually cost them. The family donated their shares, like the voting shares of the voting stock of the company, which is about 2% of the company, went into this Patagonia Purpose Trust, right? And that's the trust that's going to help make sure the company stays on its mission. But in order to donate to that trust, the family had to pay about $17.5 million in taxes. So not only did they give away the company, but they paid taxes, additional taxes, in order to give away the company. And the other 98% that they gave away, they set it up as a 501c4, not a 501c3, like maybe a American Public Media or whatever, where it's a nonprofit and you can get a tax deduction. They set it up as a 501c4 so that they can lobby and make political contributions and do a bit more political stuff, which means that they don't get a tax write-off for the donation of all these shares to the company. I think it's incredibly fascinating. And, you know, you have this giving pledge by a lot of these multi-billionaires who talk about giving away either half of their wealth. But because of the way the stock market works and because of the way wealth works in a capitalist society, these people are still getting richer, even as they're giving away their money. because they still have that foundational wealth that continues to grow. This family has given away the wealth and the source of the wealth, which mm-hmm. I think is really astonishing.
Yeah, I think two things. Actually, no, just one thing. And I need to sort of call myself out here, as well to some degree as to call out the New York Times for just the coverage of this thing. You remember like a month ago, there was mm-hmm. that huge gift to Leonard Leo of $1.6 yeah. billion. Dollars. Leonard Leo, leader yeah. of the legal of the Federalist Society. Uh-huh. It's the same tax code mechanism that's being used.
Oh, yeah. But a totally yeah. different and framing and coverage.
Exactly.
Wow.
And look, I was absolutely appalled when Leonard Leo from the Federalist Society got $1.6 billion to play with to do rightist, conservative, you know, judicial things and whatever the hell else he wants. And so we need to be clear-eyed here that this is the same mechanism that the Schwinnards are using to save the planet. And I need to be honest with myself and the listeners that, you know.
That is such a good check on, like, the bias and our echo chambers and, like, how the framing of something shapes the way that we hear it. And, I mean, and here's a prime example of the fact that we are definitely not any different than anybody else, and the fact that we can be on the other side of this too. These two stories were framed completely differently, and I certainly read them completely differently.
As did I.
But I'm so glad that you made that point, because you're right. It's the exact same thing. Actually, this is more money.
Yes.
Oh, although this is to environmental causes, which I guess you can't separate that from a political cause, though, either.
You can't, right? You got the same. Right. Sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander. Got to be, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. Yep. Thank you for bringing it up. Very, very good point.
You betcha.
All right. What's yours?
So I've got two, one of which is really substantive and the other one of which is really petty, but I'm going to say it anyway. So, you know, every time that daylight saving comes around or goes away, we all go, oh, my God, this is terrible. This sucks. Even though, you know, when you and I were kids, it just kind of happened and nobody complained. But then social media came along. Well, so the Senate, you might remember last time we changed the clocks, passed a bill that said, oh, we're going to get rid of daylight saving. Or we're going
to
do something about it.
To everyone's surprise, because they were tricked.
I know, right? That bill is now dead in the House. They can't agree on whether it should be daylight saving all the time or it should not. And I just want to put that marker down that we can't even agree on that. So that's, you know, one point. Here's the real news, though. And I've been troubled by, obviously troubled, because it's a gross manipulation of people. But. So we all saw the news last night that Governor DeSantis down in Florida had chartered two planes and put approximately 50 Venezuelan undocumented people in the United States, families, children, on a plane and sent them to Martha's Vineyard, where they were unloaded and basically put upon the good graces of the people of Martha's Vineyard to take care of them. DeSantis obviously making a political point, which resonates really smartly with his base. I mean, he said in a press conference.
And I should say Martha's Vineyard is known to be sort of a liberal bastion very wealthy, liberal people hang out. Sorry.
Absolutely. And I'm pretty sure the town leaders are on the record as wanting to be a sanctuary city. And DeSantis had a press conference in which he said, we are more than happy to send these people to greener pastures where they are welcome. I mean, he's making a really smart political point for his base, repulsive though it may be. And the thing that has bothered me is that this is manipulation literally of people and bodies to make social and political points. And what does that remind you of? Well, of course, it reminds you of the civil rights movement and the abuses of people and bodies to make political and social points back then. And lo and behold, here's the John F. Kennedy Library this morning pointing out and providing a news clipping of an exact an analogous event during the Freedom Rides of the middle 60s where Southern, I'll just read you the tweet, to embarrass Northern liberals and humiliate black people, Southern white citizens councils, look those up if you don't know what they are, started their so-called reverse freedom rides, giving black people one-way tickets to Northern cities with false promises of jobs, housing, and better lives. And so, number one, how about that? And number two, I will go to my grave saying history matters.
It truly does. And what was really devastating was, you know, hearing some of the interviews with those families that they didn't know mm-hmm. where they were.
Mm-hmm. They had no clue, yeah.
And this has been an ongoing situation here in D.C. as well, because DeSantis mm-hmm. and others have been sending busloads of folks to D.C. And around the same time that those folks arrived in Martha's Vineyard, they also dropped off a couple of busloads of people outside of the Naval Observatory, which is where mm-hmm. the vice president has right. her residence.
Right.
And it's awful, as you said. But I saw some of the community reaction from Martha's Vineyard was mm-hmm. very kind. And I was glad to see that community seems to be stepping up to try to help the folks and give them a welcome. And I should say, having spent some time at the border, there is a huge infrastructure of really caring, compassionate people down mm-hmm. there trying their best to serve the folks coming across the border. It's way too many people for them to handle. And they do a lot down there, the charitable groups and human mm-hmm. rights organizations and things like that. And it was nice to see that some of these communities have stepped up. Here in D.C., a lot of the religious community has really organized and galvanized to try to help the people who are coming in and get them settled and get them services. But at the same time, the mayor of D.C., Muriel Bowser, has asked the U.S. government for help and asked for U.S. Yeah. National Guard support to deal with this influx of people. But the Biden administration said no, mainly because it seems that they were really concerned about the optics of basically having the National Guard in uniform setting up what would effectively be migrant camps in the nation's capital. And that would not bode well. But it's a terrible political tactic to use people this way. If you haven't had a chance to see this post from the Kennedy Library, go ahead and look at it. It's astonishing, the parallels. But
it's amazing.
At the same time,
good. Sorry.
I hope that the people who were subject to this, you know, get what they need at the end of this awful experience. So that's it.
One last thought on this. There will be many political tells on this for Governor DeSantis and how it works out for him. A really huge one is what he's going to do the next time there's an influx of Cuban migrants to Florida.
Yeah.
Right? Is he going to send them to Martha's Vineyard too in the face of the Cuban population in South Florida? I don't know. Anyway, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it for that one. All right, so let's see. Whoever started us early, and I don't even know who's driving today, do that thing that you're supposed to do right here,
please. It's at the top of the sheet. It's Jake.
It is not on the top of the sheet. Oh, it is at the top of the sheet.
I always thought it was only at the bottom. Did you not know that?
Go to the bottom. I did not. Well, So let that be everybody's make me smile. Kai doesn't really know what he's doing today because he doesn't actually have another one. He doesn't have an actual make me smile. So get a good chuckle out of that. Laugh at my expense.
Chuckle.
And let's move on because you've got a good one.
Oh my gosh, I was so happy. So I wasn't really paying much attention to the Emmys, like apparently the vast majority of America that didn't watch. But Lizzo won an Emmy for her show, Watch Out for the Big Girls, which was a reality TV show where she was recruiting backup dancers for her tour. And it's such a great show. It's on I think it's on Amazon Prime. I binged the whole thing. I loved it. It's so nice because not only is it sort of empowering from a sort of body positivity thing, but mm-hmm. also in the first episode, they have this basically a dance-off competition and they eliminate some people and I know this is a spoiler, but it doesn't hurt too much. At the end of the first episode, she's like, I have room for all of you. Everybody who's left, I have room for you on my team. You're going to go through a couple of weeks of training, and it is up to you to stay on the team. So they had zero incentive through the whole show to be scheming against each other or scamming each other or like trying to outdo each other. They all just had to be their individual best to stay in a job that they basically had. And it was just such a different vibe and such a lovely show. And I was really glad to see her win for that. And she had an amazing quote when she received her Emmy. When I was a little girl, all I wanted to see was me in the media. I'm pausing because I just remember that there's profanity in this because it's Lizzo. Anyway, when I was a little girl, I'm not going to say it, Bridget. When I was a little girl, all I wanted to see was me in the media, she said, and I'm reading from the piece in Variety. Someone fat like me, black like me, beautiful like me. If I could go back and tell little Lizzo something, I would be like, you're going to see that person, but word, it's going to have to be you.
Yeah, it's going to have to be you. That's actually a great line.
It's going to have to be you. And what a message, you know, like make that thing that you wish you had for yourself. I love it. And just like unfiltered endorsement of the show. So that's my make me smile. It made me very happy.
That would count for both of us.
And have you seen it?
No, but you know what? I watched her on Saturday Night Live. She was amazing. She was amazing. She was so engaging, and her monologue, it was just so great, and more power to her, honest to God.
I follow her on TikTok. She's hilarious. So funny. Okay. That's it for us today in the Lizzo fandom on Make Me Smart. I will be back tomorrow with Amy Scott, not Kai, for Economics on Tap. It's okay, Kai. We forgive you. And an end-of-the-week drink on our YouTube live stream starting at 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, assuming that this rail agreement holds and I actually make it to New York. And we'll have more news, drinks, and play a round of half-full, half-empty. I think the Northeast Corridor is fine, so.
Yeah, I think you guys were always going to be fine, right? They only canceled the long-haul ones, and now they're putting those back together.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
All right. Even though I'm not going to be here, it's another family thing for me this weekend. Keep sending us your thoughts, your questions, your comments, whatever you like. Our email is makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a message, 508-UB-SMART. And in honor of Amy Scott, those are the letters, U and B. UB-SMART.
Spelling bee.
Oh, for crying out loud.
It was so much fun. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Olivia Jow is our intern.
Today's episode was engineered by, Jake Cherry. Bridget Bodner is the senior producer. Donna Tam is the director of On Demand. Both of whom are probably now shaking their heads going, did this moron get this job?
But I guess I have to add a secondary make me smile with that link about the spelling bee, which was so much
fun. That's true. That's true. We'll put it on the show page. People will figure it out. All right.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.